Rafael, County of Santa Rafael, actually. No, County of Santa Cruz, City of Santa Rafael, for 20 years until she got laid off, and then I grabbed her and put her on the show. Wasn't laid off. We'll get all the details from her in just a moment. But first, all this misinformation and a little music to kind of set the scene. Stay tuned.
Big Ben Johnson made a bet with Madman Mike that he could cross the quarry in the middle of the night. He got there about halfway across. He started sinking down in the red clay moss. Nearby, standing on the tracks where the trains used to come, was Madman Mike beating on his drum, laughing out loud. Eyes rolling in his head, standing on the tracks in the Lucifer's tent, with a long red cape and fire in his eyes. He lifted up his hands to the midnight skies, and the thunder started to roll, and the lightning flashed wild, and Big Ben Johnson started crying like a child.
Don't go down to the quarry, don't go down.
Then the earth gave a shudder. The quarry starts to swallow it.
Screaming down and jumps into the fiery pit.
With a laugh that shivered the center of the bone, a Madman Mike just standing there alone. He's calling all the people to take their turn.
And all in the pit and eternally burn.
He's howling at the moon cause he can't come back. In the evening when we're sitting there in front of the fire, we laugh at old Lucifer before we retire. Don't go down to the quarry in the middle of the night, cause you'll never come back, you'll never be right. We lost Maggie there just last spring, and Big Ben Johnson, he couldn't do a thing.
From Peter, Paul, and Mary, working on our new board here, which seems to be either hypersensitive or hyper-insensitive. That is... Indeed, the Peter, Paul, and Mary album, which must remain at the moment a mystery, since I can't read the label of this rather obscure, but rather, you know, nice-sounding tape. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Your host, me, is Robert Norse. That's my name. And in case you want to call in, the phone number here is fairly easy to remember, 427-FRSC, which may remind you hauntingly of the name of the station, Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's also 427-3772 for the numerically able, and check us out. I'm really interested in hearing incoming calls, particularly with our guest in the studio I'm about to introduce here, Claire Machado. I kind of fumbled around with an introduction earlier. She has worked in the planning departments. Is that correct? Code compliance for San Rafael, Fremont up north, and in the county of Santa Cruz until the first few years of the millennium, 2002, 2003, when you were pressured out?
Well, let's just say I was working in a hostile work environment at that time and had a hostile work environment complaint that never really got adjudicated. But what really happened is over time, I dropped with pneumonia eventually, and my doctor basically said, it's either your work or your life. And so I had to make a decision that my job wasn't worth the heart attack that I was heading for, and decided to live and take my knowledge and go into the private sector and actually help people get through the process, which is not easy for those who aren't familiar with it.
And you actually have been working on assisting a lot of people, property owners, people maybe don't so much property, people dealing with county planning, and also with the kind of some rather extraordinary procedures or lack of procedures that the county has regarding getting a permit for zoning and planning. Is that right?
Yeah, basically there was a hidden appeals board for several years that just was recently reinstated. That appeals board is intended to provide some due process to the system. There's a lot of disagreement about what the county planning management staff thinks that it should hear and what the public thinks it should hear currently. And when it gets all down to what should happen, it's all really in the code, and the code just needs to be followed, and it needs to be, you know, followed by everybody.
I think the bottom line, and we've talked a little bit about this, you've been on my show both 6 years ago shortly after you retired because of health and pressure reasons and harassment reasons, and you actually were involved in checking out the Rump Camp Paradise site that was a sort of set up out in Aptos at a church, mm-hmm. and trying to, in a way, to protect them from potential complaints, as I understood it. But more recently, you and others have stormed the Board of Supervisors to demand that they follow the law, set up this Board of Appeals so that the decisions of the Planning Department can actually be reviewed around. And this was the issue I think we talked about 3 or 4 months ago. I was a bit critical of you, and you were telling me to ease up and, you know, give you a chance to talk about this, and I'm going to try to do that today, around the issues of really harsh code enforcement activity against people in the county who, for example, might be providing some low-income housing to people, might be providing secondary units, who might be, opening up things for folks who don't have so much money but who can't do that because of rather rigid and harsh regulations, which actually can't even be appealed properly because there wasn't even a board set up for that. And you recently had a victory because you brought many, many people to the Board of Supervisors, as well as, I guess, a lawsuit. And in doing that, and you are pretty savvy, or at least people seem to think you are, in giving legal advice. You're not an attorney.
No. I don't give legal advice. I give land use advice.
You don't give illegal advice, hopefully. you give advice about the state of the law, which might not. Certainly, you don't represent yourself as an attorney, but you've got some knowledge of some of the legal situations that you've studied, right?
Well, I would say I personally don't have a lawsuit against the county. There are several other people who do that I've been requested to do research for to assist their cases, especially with my knowledge of the county processes and where information is within their systems to locate and provide, and also provide them insight as to, you know, the operating procedures and what happens. And so my job is to tell people what the law is and provide them alternatives for how to meet that code.
As you understand it. You don't claim to have gone to law school or anything, but you don't really have to go to law school to research the law. In fact, that's what I keep telling people on the show, is they should research any laws that they're charged with violating themselves.
Well, code compliance, and let's talk about that for a second. Laws have a purpose of intent. They have a scope. There are certain elements to a law. And there's that's all tied in together. It's called legislative intent. When somebody adopts a law, that's the purpose and intent of the law. And that's kind of what I think is going wrong with some of what's happening with the county codes, in the sense that the intent of the enforcement part of the code, which is in Chapter 19, actually speaks to land use regulations, whereas in Chapter 12, it talks about building code regulations, and it's within Chapter 12 and enforcement of Chapter 12 that this all falls under in the Board of Appeals and their authority and the building code.
This is kind of arcane for people who aren't following this.
It may be, but in simplistic terms, there's land use, there's construction, and then there's environmental law protection.
People say, well, who cares? What's the difference? I mean, I guess...
There is a big difference.
I'm sure there is, but the question is, why bother to even consider it unless you're, I guess, pursuing some special concerns of people who feel they've been wronged. Now, in what way, in the most concrete and easily understandable terms, have people been injured by what the county's been doing the last few years, and how are you guys working to, and you women working to, you know, overcome this?
Well, in terms of the permit process, it really goes back to 1978 when the Board of Appeals was first established. And then more recently in 2002, the Board of Supervisors passed a resolution that said that there wasn't enough being done to ensure permit processing was going on smoothly, and they adopted a Bill of Rights, and that Bill of Rights has certain provisions. The county will be clear and specific about requirements.
Again, I'm going to interrupt you because this sounds very legalistic to people. I want you to tell me what injuries property owners are suffering, or even poor people are suffering, that we should be concerned about.
They're being made upon making a request to the county for a simple permit to provide reports that are excessive and that are onerous, so that owners aren't able to go through the process and actually do their improvements.
And so, in other words, they're deterring the development of property such that people could have, say, rental units that now don't exist because they're not allowed to do so. Or if they do exist, they exist illegally, which makes it, shall we say, makes tenants more likely to be prey to unscrupulous landlords because they're afraid that
potentially they
will be, you know, revealed. And, you know, if it's an illegal unit, while it may be cheaper, the landlord can say to the guy, look, I'm giving you a good deal, even though you're not getting hot water 3 days a week.
There are things in place for tenants in the case where that doesn't occur well. For example, in this county, we have something called the Rental Relocation Ordinance, which isn't in many counties, but they did adopt it here. And if there it is found that you're living in an illegal unit and your owner gets a red tag because of that, this is a code that allows you to get legally through court, which is kind of a civil legal process, up to 3 times your rent so that you can afford to move and go elsewhere. Now, a lot of times when we get out in the world, people aren't told about a specific code, and it's called California Health and Safety 17920.3. And that particular health and safety code sets forth the minimum requirements for habitability for a rental unit. Hot and cold running water, electricity, no vermin, close to the elements, things like that. And when a unit is rented out, it should meet all of those standards. And if you're not familiar with those standards, you can get them in the public library. And when you actually rent a unit, you should walk through it. And there's a period of time when you first walk through a unit and you can write to the owner and say, thank you for letting me move in. However, there's these certain things that aren't up to code. I'd like you to fix them. And the reason you want to write a letter directly to the owner is because you have to do that to put on record the fact that there is a problem and give the owner an ability to correct it. After 30 days, if it's not corrected, then you can talk to the Environmental Health Department, which is actually who does the housing inspection of that nature in this county, at least in the county jurisdiction, and they can then follow up with the owner and say, hey, we have a report of substandard housing conditions. Now, it could be
that... Do they usually follow up?
Yes, they do. And it could be, though, that in turn, someone also files a complaint to the county planning department about maybe it's an illegal unit, and that's a different investigation as to was it or was it not created legally, constructed illegally.
But the point I was making, though, was that the reason that it's important that there be a due process for property owners and there not be these onerous restrictions as you see them on developing property in the county is because this puts, first of all, it discourages landlords from creating units. And secondly, it encourages it puts tenants in a more difficult position because they may have no choice because of the housing shortage but to live in substandard units. Many of the people listening to this show are not just living in substandard units. They're living in vehicles or they're living outside,
right.
And they have no shelter whatsoever. 95% of the people who are homeless in this city, not to mention the county, have zero shelter for walk-in emergency shelter. There's right. there's an interfaith satellite
and,
shelter
and,
program.
And they've
that's
zoned
all.
And created laws against doing things like that. Why? Who knows? Why they won't allow you to be on your property and have a mobile home without a permit? To me, that's a money-making scheme of the county just to make sure you're okay, Mother
so
Mary.
So there are a lot of kind of permits and requirements that the county has. This has been the claim, I think, when I observed one of the Board of Supervisors meetings, that a lot of the folks who are concerned about this issue came to the County Board of Supervisors and denounced this process and said, look, you know, the county is not only restricting us from building, but they're fining us.
Right. They, and many citizens also believe, although the county does not agree, that the red tag process is part of something the Board of Appeals should be reviewing, because when a red tag is issued, especially under the building code, Chapter 12.
Red tag means you can't.
It's a notice of violation.
You can't live. It's uninhabitable if it's red tagged.
It can be deemed as such when it's red tagged. But what I mean is it's a red tag is more of saying stop work, stop construction, stop what you're doing, stop using it, whatever it is you're doing in violation of the code.
And fix it.
And if it's a construction violation, meaning it was an addition or a remodel or something that was done without a required permit, that is something that is a actual building code violation versus a use violation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, especially what the code allows, is that any decision or determination made by staff having to involve administration or enforcement of the building code would be appealable back to this body. And that's a part of what there's a huge disagreement
again,
right now.
Let me cut through because, again, I'm trying to simplify what appears to my ear to be legalese, even though I know to you it's very familiar because you deal with this a lot every day. And also you are paid to do this kind of work by folks to research these issues and to present them to the Board of Supervisors and to write letters and to make phone calls.
And it is complicated. It's not easy to understand at first glance.
Sure. But I mean, what my show is about is whether this is an issue that houseless people, homeless people, and poor people should take seriously. We talked about this earlier, you and I, or whether it's something that merely affects the ability of a property owner to make money off her or his property. Before I get into that, which is a very important issue and one I think that is worth talking about, particularly around matters like rent control, which I would suspect many of the property owners of this county don't want, because they would prefer to set their own rents and not have a city or a county bureaucracy involved in that and be able to do it as they consider the market will bear and all that sort of thing. The issue has been, to some extent, and this is of concern to a lot of us who are dealing with the city and county bureaucracies in terms of the police departments, in terms of the city council's unresponsiveness to the situation for homeless people and their basic civil rights issues. They are simply not responsive to simple basic human rights concerns or common sense or even the calls of many people that say stop arresting people for sleeping at night, or perhaps in the case of the issues you're concerned with, stop levying fines on people who are simply trying to who meet the minimum code, the state codes for habitability, but who are having trouble climbing and going through the hoops that have also been set up. The additional hoops have been set up by the county, which I'm not too familiar with. And with regard to this, as I said before, you have had a victory because a board that was supposed to be set up years ago has not been set up, has not been as a board of appeal, so that the county's planners say, you're screwed, we're going to fine you, you should be able to appeal that to this board. But the board hasn't existed, or if it has, it's had shills who were on it who had no training and had no competence and who weren't properly chosen. Correct me if I'm wrong about any of that.
Well, actually, the people on the board were qualified. It was the fact that there wasn't any appeals, weren't any appeals that were allowed to go forward to the board.
So they were qualified, but they acted illegally.
No, the board was never called. The planning department never allowed an appeal to go forward to the board as the gatekeeper.
Isn't that a violation of some basic constitutional right? Aren't they supposed to be informing the public of their right to appeal these decisions?
Under board resolution, in fact, they are.
So, in fact, they're violating the law. So you have criminals in positions of power at the county level. You're nodding. Say yes.
Yes.
There you go. So now you're going to, of course, be sued for slander on the air. We'll, of course, be taking your case.
I believe what was really criminal is since the time that John DeCourcy left the county, who was the chief building official at the time, which was approximately 2004, to the time that Jennifer Hutchinson obtained her certification as a chief building official, which was just October 11th last year, there was no certified qualified chief building official operating as a building official, which is required and was required as early as 1996 under state law, health and safety code. And that state law was adopted to protect the public. The state decided every chief building official should have the same level of knowledge and the same level of understanding if they're going to be, doing this work.
So the guy was the person who was making decisions between 2004 and 2008 in the planning department about what, fining people, code enforcement? We're talking
about everything. Everything related to the code.
Everything related was unqualified.
And uncertified. And as a chief
and uncertified. And he, you know, so are all the decisions that he made for the last 4 years illegal?
Questionable.
They're questionable. So are they being sued in court? Are those decisions being taken to court?
Yes. Many people have been aggrieved through their permit process and through red tape process. They are now taking their cases to the court.
Now,
level.
Let's cut to the nitty-gritty here, since this is what my show is about.
But there is a lack of political will to deal with homelessness, I would agree.
For sure. But let's get to that now in terms of how of why we have you in the studio. Well, we have you in the studio for a variety of reasons, but one of them is... She wasn't kidnapped here, though, folks. She came here on her own volition, actually in her own vehicle. So, and I don't mean a bicycle, all you bicycle lovers, which might not be a good idea. But in any case...
I like bicycles, though.
Bicycles are good. Wish I could, you know, maybe someday I'll actually ride one more regularly. Unlikely, but possible. Probably good for me. So we're talking with Claire Machado, and the issue is, for me, why should poor and homeless people be concerned about all these arcane legalisms? We know that the property owners are pissed because they had fines levied on them for the last 4 years by a boss of the department who was not qualified. And it's certainly going to say, oh, we found he wasn't qualified, so we can attack the fines. Well, that's very nice for the people who got fined.
Not just the fines, but the process.
And the process, very nice for that. But the issue is, what really went on there that the poor people, that the rest of us should be concerned about? It's just a bunch of people making money off their property. Why should we care about that?
Well, if people do want additional housing, what's happened is a complete reduction of the amount of permits issued to create that housing. So, you know, here we have population growing, and yet the pipeline to create new housing is not occurring.
Yeah, but housing for who? In other words, we're talking about housing. They always like to say affordable housing, which has nothing to do with poor and homeless people, since the only housing that they're really is accessible to them, aside from vehicles where it's illegal to sleep, and shelters where you have to be out. You know, you have to be in by, I don't know, 4 and out by 6 in the morning.
Okay, well, let's talk about
that. And you're not likely to get in there anyway because there's so few of them.
Well, most of those projects are redevelopment agency projects and funded with redevelopment agency funds. And 20% of those funds have to be used for affordable housing projects.
Again, affordable, as I was about to say, has nothing to do with what's really affordable.
Right.
That's talking about median income, which is what, $50,000, $60,000 in the county? Who makes $60,000 a year is homeless?
What makes something affordable?
Percentage of the homeless population.
Is allowing enough density to be created so that can occur and be actually built out, and you know, with
what can occur,
the development of more housing or more density, as it were. What you want is more density so that more people can be accommodated. And
why should people have any? Why is there any profit motive to accommodate extremely low income people? Why should we? Why would property owners be interested whatsoever in doing this? Why wouldn't they want to deal with luxury apartments or apartments for people who have much more money anyway? In other words, why should we be talking about this on this show at all?
Well, I suppose those without a conscience don't care about the lowest denominator in society. But those of us who, I suppose, hopefully are intelligent enough to realize there, but for the grace of God go I, and sometime something might change and you might find yourself in a situation much like these other homeless people are, whether they lost a job or their health condition changed and they couldn't maintain their work or some other, you know, catastrophic family or event or thing happened in their life. And maybe not. Maybe it's just a preference. They like being mobile, but there is definitely decisions that get made differently, and the people who are in those throes of doing that are very underrepresented in high-level government.
But also, are they also probably very underrepresented in the groups of property owners who are criticizing the high-level government? I mean, I wonder how many of these property owners that you probably know fairly well because you've been talking to some of them, and you come to Board of Supervisors meetings with them, you're hired by some of them, right?
Well,
how many of them are actually interested in building extremely low-income housing? I think very few probably are.
Well, I don't know. I'd have to poll them.
Do you know anybody who is?
Yes.
Okay.
My clients run the gamut from, you know, very conservative, very liberal. So, you know, that doesn't matter.
Extremely low-income housing is a specific category. I think it talks about less than $25,000 to $20,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You got your affordable housing, you got your low-income housing, got your extremely low-income housing. These are specific categories.
Right. The difficulty in this area is that the cost of land had gone up. Now, of course, it's lowered in the last few years here in the economy, but I think the underlying cost of the property predicates what happens with it. If somebody can buy low and create a lot to sell low or house low, it's possible. But the market hasn't really allowed for that to occur. And again, the development fees to even try to do it, especially with a board that may not approve it. It's like, you know, how much money do you want somebody to throw down a pipeline for something that may or may not happen?
And the thing we talked about before this show, we had lunch together, was whether in actual practical terms it was likely that if all your dreams were met and if the, you know, the Board of Appeals, which apparently is the chair of the board, resigned, Mike Bethke, you were telling me, resigned.
Yes.
Because he felt under such pressure from the staff. And I got to tell you, I have no sympathy for the disrespect from the city or the county staff, generally speaking. I think they are from the most conservative bureaucratic elements, whether they're under Dick Wilson or who's the CAO?
Susan Mariello.
Susan Mariello, who's even worse probably than Dick Wilson, although who knows? I mean, it's hard to say. We could have a pissing contest and figure out who's worse among those two people in terms of the situation. But what's really likely to happen if all your dreams came true and, you know, suddenly people could start building as they wanted to build, but the property values stayed pretty much where they are? I mean, wouldn't your answer be the answer of the bigots online at the Sentinel website, which says, move somewhere else if you're poor. You can't fucking afford the houses here, you know?
Well, the underlying thing is, again, we were talking about, even if the Building Board of Appeals is in place, it relates to construction. And what you're really talking about in terms of developing anything is land use and whether the powers that be want you to use the land for that purpose. If you want a homeless park, it needs to be zoned for that, or they need to say, yes, you can have a special use permit to do that. What was interesting about the situation with the church was that they were actually more protected because
they were
religious.
You're talking about the church in Aptos where Camp Paradise moved.
That's correct.
In 2002. And the
county at that time didn't want to challenge the laws that protect religious groups and environments more than they do, say, the private person.
Although we're talking about a very small group of people, 15
at
or 20
At that time,
people.
It was very small.
I mean, Camp Paradise was originally a very relatively large encampment of 60 to 100 people along the San Lorenzo River that was flooded out in the winter of 2001. And I've talked about that at length on Free Radio. It was actually a homeless-run campground under the iron hand and the friendly smile of Larry Templeton.
Yeah. Well, I think what the politicians want is to know what will work. And the only way you can find out what will work is actually go to that constituency and say, what is and is not working for you? What type of housing are you going to want?
But there's no motivation for politicians to go to the homeless constituencies. Homeless people are very poor. They can't contribute money and to any extent to political campaigns.
But they can vote.
They can vote, but they aren't a very large percentage of the population. They're 2 or 3% at most.
So there's not maybe a lot of motivation to do that other than some moral motivation and feeling that, yes, we have an obligation to take care of everybody within our society, within the city or county we live in.
I mean, it's interesting, though, that the same people that might feel that obligation, who are entrenched affordable housing advocates, so half the time I'm calling them poverty pimps, and the other half of the time I'm recognizing that they're probably more enlightened and liberal in some respects than your average landowner who wants to make money off his property, by building classy housing and, you know, keeping the riffraff out. You know, I mean, so, and I've got to say that I speak, if we're talking about Felton and Scotts Valley and Soquel and Capitola, to some extent out of ignorance in terms of the actual particulars of each of these locations. And so I want to be...
In terms of numbers?
In terms of whether there's, you know, entrenched, bigoted attitudes among property owners that would make me say, well, I'm glad you're supporting the rights of people to due process who are property owners, but it really doesn't concern those of us who are concerned about homeless civil rights because, you know, it's like supporting the rights of the Ku Klux Klan. I agree it's okay to support the rights of the Ku Klux Klan because, you know, I believe in civil rights for everybody, but, you know, that doesn't mean, you know, if I'm an African American, I'm going to be doing too much agitating on that on their behalf. So that's
well,
a concern I have.
Whether you agree with use regulation or not, the building code was really to provide a minimum safety standard so that something won't burn you or fall on you, and so you're safe in the structure that's created to live in. That's the intent. And again, if it's overly applied, it doesn't allow that to happen very much. And so if it's applied at the standard it should be, and reasonably so, then it's, again, designed to protect people.
You got to remember, though, that the illusion of neutrality that what you're talking about seems to give, to say that, oh, well, you know, these are just sort of neutral statues are designed to protect health and safety. I would tell you that the whole thing is economically based, and if there were a real concern in the society about health and safety, homeless people would be treated much differently than they are.
Well,
and
I,
you know, and so I don't think it's really true
what you're saying.
Well,
you have to go back to who adopted the code. The code was really made because of losses. Every time they have an earthquake, every time they have a fire, they look at the damage. They look how the structure is changed, and they say, okay. How can we just stop, or how can we protect loss of life through these damaging processes? And you know, engineers and models get created and things like that, and they actually test.
I mean, how can we
things.
Protect ourselves from lawsuits, from attorneys, because life is lost?
No, how can we actually protect people from dying when the building falls? It's not going to fall on them.
We're talking about middle class people who we
care
about, not homeless people.
We can get out anybody in the building. Those codes don't say, well, whether you're rich or you're poor, you get a different exit or a different this or
no,
that.
No, but the reality underlying such situations, for example, with emergency shelter, is always involving a disparity. Every time, whether it's in Katrina, or whether we're talking about the fire in Santa Barbara, or whether we're talking about the earthquake in Santa Cruz, you'll always see homeless people treated differently who were previously homeless from those who became homeless because of the conditions, middle-class people who became homeless.
Even if they weren't previously homeless. There are so many people from the Martin Fire, the Summit Fire, and the Traving Fire.
Local fires in Santa Cruz.
Local fires here in Santa Cruz, not very long ago, who are still trying to not be homeless and obtain permits and rebuild. And there's been very few of those permits that have been issued, even though Governor Schwarzenegger said, you know, county, you're going to.
This has caused a lot of outrage, and in fact, was one of the main topics at this Board of Supervisors meeting that I observed the video of, or maybe I even saw the actual meeting, and has resulted in your and others bringing to the board the lack of credentials of the staff chief who was denying this stuff, these permits.
Yeah. There are real
as
people
well
out
as
there.
The lack hurting. The lack of existence of the Board of Appeals.
There are real people out there still homeless.
Right, but I'm talking about the real people that anybody gives a shit about are the real people who had some money beforehand, who can organize in groups, and who lost their property.
But even
that's
though these
the
guys
people
have,
that they
and
care
they had
about.
Property they owned, and there was value to that property, they're still being treated by the planning department as if they're homeless now and they don't mean anything.
No, which shows the arrogance and the entrenched, what would you call it, the arthritic insensibility and lack of adaptability and how out of touch the planning department is, even with its, you know, the property owners who presumably will ultimately be able to kick their asses down the road. It shows how entrenched they are.
Well, they are all now getting together and again, creating lawsuits.
But they're not getting together on behalf of the poorest people in our county. And that, of course, is my point. And that is why I'm always sympathetic when people get together with pitchforks and torches and kick the asses of these bureaucrats when they're denying people rights, even
well,
if it's a privileged group.
But it takes
group,
money you know. To fight because the you people know. Who are in court are those who have enough money to hire the lawyers, to provide the rights, and once they begin to prevail, that will actually ripple through to the lowest party in this county.
The Tinkledown theory.
That's correct. Mm.
I think Ronald Reagan came up with that one. I'm not terribly impressed with it, but I understand what you're saying.
It will level the playing field once it's done.
Well, it is true that when the slave owners and the rich property owners and the rich merchants in 1776 rebelled, it had some, you know, effects on the rest of the community when they broke with the British Empire. So, I mean, I agree with that.
There are so many contractors out there and people dying to have works projects, you know, wishing building permits would be issued so that they could bid on jobs and keep their families fed and stay in their houses and not go into homelessness. And it does have an effect on the economy by not allowing this process to proceed in a rightful way.
So we're talking with Claire Machado, who is a code enforcement expert, I'd have to say, who's been working in this field for more than 20 years now, independently for the last, I don't know, four or five years. You can call in questions, comments, thoughts at 427-3772, 427-3772. I'll take your call as I try to struggle with this new equipment, which looks pretty shiny and hopefully works. Also, I'm going to be talking about other subjects such as my upcoming trial. For those of you who haven't been listening to Free Radio or my show, I was arrested. Well, I was cited. Arrested is a technical term, but I wasn't put in handcuffs and I wasn't taken to jail. But I was held and I was banned from the metro talking to two homeless people and interviewing them. It was a consensual interview. We chatted. And the whole thing had to do originally with my bringing to the attention of the Metro, because these two people were concerned about the fact that there was religious sermons being broadcast over loudspeakers from the Metro onto Pacific Avenue. I guess that's part of their scheme to... Usually they use classical music, apparently, but they decided not to use classical music, but it might have more of an impact to just drive people away with scripture, kind of the opposite of the, you know, bringing people to, people have to listen to scripture. To get a meal, you got to listen to scripture often in church meals, but this was sort of the opposite attempt. Anyway, when I brought it to their attention, they tried to ignore it. The security guard didn't want to say who he was. I told the supervisor. Supervisor did respond by, you know, stopping the sermonizing. But then when I came back an hour later to chat with two guys who were there in front of the Metro, you know, in a relatively wide open Sunday afternoon, I was approached by another security guard who told me I had to leave. And I said no, and he called the police, and they wrote me a ticket for $248.
Bail, something like that, yeah.
That I'd have to pay. And I said, no chance, I'm going to court. And that's what's happening tomorrow. I'll be in court at 1:30 tomorrow in Department 1, for those of you who'd like to check it out. You can also read about it online at Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. There's a story there that I wrote up that kind of describes it. This is an old story for those of you who've been listening to the show regularly. It happened back in November.
But it also goes back to the code and the codes that have been adopted and their purpose and intent in what we were talking about before.
The laws of Santa Cruz.
And uh-huh. Which are separate. There is a separate law for the Metro Center that did not get applied to you. They applied a different law for, you know, business trespass, but there's a special law that has to do with a specific location of the Metro Center, and they didn't seem to follow that, and that seems odd because that law has been on the books since 1988.
I mean, again, you know, you're raising arguments that my attorney will raise in court tomorrow, but for most people, to me, the issue is, should security guards and police be allowed to tell people for no reason whatsoever that they have to leave an area open to the public?
Or do anything.
Or do this, I mean, you know, or
ordered,
you know, order people around without cause, and if you don't say, yes, sir, three bags full, you're suddenly going to find yourself fined, ticketed, jailed, and possibly brutalized. If you don't move quickly enough, as happens with some, if not regularity, frequently enough to be of concern here in Santa Cruz.
Well, at least if it's with a police officer, he's got a badge and he's got a nameplate, and you can identify who that person is. And when somebody's trying to attempt to do that with you, and they're just some private security guy, and you have no clue who he is and what his qualifications are, and he is obviously just saying, go do this, it sounds kind of arbitrary.
Right, and in fact, and these security guards are popping up at different places in town. They're popping up around New Leaf. They're popping up out by Calvary Calvary Episcopal Church. They're popping up around the library, or they were at different points in the last year or two. So they're the First Alarm Security, or I guess there are other groups also, not just First Alarm, but in fact, the Metro has gone through at least three security organizations in the last year, although I'm still trying to get public records from them, that it shows there is a excessive use, just like in Iraq, they're using, you know, mercenaries instead of troops. In Santa Cruz, they like to use security instead of cops because, to some extent, they're cheaper, I suppose.
Well, but they still should be knowledgeable, and if they're going to do some type of an arrest, I thought it was unusual on your tape. He seemed to challenge you to show him the law that he should have known.
We're going
to
play some tape here now.
He's challenging you, the citizen, to know the law that he should have known, that he should have been enforcing correctly, which I think is hilarious. But
it's interesting to hear the tape. And actually, I have played the tape before. For those of you who want to, you can go back to the early November 2008 shows. And unfortunately, I don't know if all of them are described on the Huff website. These shows are archived at www.huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org. And if you click on that and then go to the name of the show, and the name of the show is, tongue-twistingly enough, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, you will find, you click on Listen to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides and check out a few of the shows. Or if you want, you can actually go to IndieBay.org, the Santa Cruz Indie Media, and you can go to the story, and you can go directly to the links for the audio files. It'll tell you how to find the original tapes that I played, which are interspersed with a lot of commentary. So what I'm going to do tonight, because of the upcoming trial tomorrow at 1:30 in Department 1, everyone's invited if you'd like to come. There will be, unfortunately, no refreshments, but you'll get to see Judge Ariadne Simons, supposedly being the neutral judge between City Attorney John Barisoni and my attorney David Beauvais, who's volunteered to come down from Berkeley to help out with this. I'm not quite clear he's hoping to get some financial remuneration for it at some point, but he's it's a civil rights issue. He's a civil rights attorney. He's represented me and other homeless advocates in Santa Cruz before, and he also is a People's Park attorney. In fact, I may give him a call before the show is over to get some of his thoughts on this case. And Claire, I'm going to ask for some of your thoughts, because you've really kind of stood by me in this case. I've come to you in the past and said, here's a Public Records Act request. I want the Metro to tell me who these security guards are, what the rules are. Can they just tell anybody to leave for any reason whatsoever because they don't like how long their beard is or where they're standing, or they don't jump high enough or say yes, sir, yes, sir?
What I find odd is, the discovery information that you got in the last course of year or more in that area, it seems like you have been the only one who they have cited for that code. And why you? It seems a little
It's hard to tell whether we have complete records or not, because we didn't really... it's hard getting the police department and the Metro to cough up public records. I've talked about this on the air before. And if they do cough them up and say they're at the police station, when I go in to get them, I am told that if I whip out a tape recorder, they won't serve me. So you might say, well, why didn't you just put away your tape recorder and get your records? And the answer is because I think it's important that the police department be accountable. And one of the ways they're accountable, if a transcription is happening while they're giving out records, it should be a relatively simple matter. They should say, here are your records, sir. And you would say, thank you very much. And it's no big deal.
Well, a lot of people record conversations just so they can recall them later. I mean, I don't know about you, but I work on a lot of things. And so it's very helpful to be able to go back and review a tape or review a video and say, oh, okay, that's exactly what they said. And I'd rather do that than get it wrong.
And it's very helpful in this case coming up tomorrow that we have this tape, which pretty much covers it from end to end. The entire tape is 55 minutes long, and if you really want to hear it, come to court tomorrow or go online, because you'll be able to do that by going to the story online. Again, Santa Cruz Indie Media, Google for Robert Norris, that's me, Metro Santa Cruz, and you'll probably, Metropolitan Transit District or Ticket, and you'll probably find it.
Yeah, I still think it's funny you mentioned this thing about, classical music, which most people, I think, still enjoy, and, this religious sermon, and it's like, I don't know how they could somehow audibly compare that, because, one, you have music with no talking, and the other one's straight talking, music.
What you're saying, for those who don't know, is
it seems to be a deliberate attempt on their part.
What you're saying is that for those who don't know, 7-Eleven was doing this too. I don't know about 7-Eleven here, but 7-Elevens in different places were playing music through loudspeakers, classical music, to try to drive away gatherings of young people. And that is also, it's interesting, the Metro Supervisor Nelson actually acknowledges that's what he was doing, but instead for some reason...
they were responsible, at least for what was being broadcast.
Well, no, he said specifically, if you listen to the tape carefully, that that's why they were doing it. They wanted to get rid of the groups of people out there, and that was really a good way to deter them, which I think, of course, is an outrageous misuse of public money, and it's also an attack on public assembly for young people in front of the metro area.
Well, it's a public place. I mean, if they were going to, you know, broadcast something religious, what religion do you choose?
Again, I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about any kind of music, a classical music. If it's done specifically with the intention of eliminating public assembly in an area, the motive is wrong.
Correct.
The objective is unconstitutional, and again, it becomes part of my beat. My beat downtown is to dramatize and expose where the city and the police are trying to drive away young people, poor people, people of color.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would have had a problem if it was ambient music at a level that created the ambience of a metro station. However, that's not what occurred.
Right, and also as I said, I'm not sure if we're going to reach that point in the tape because I've got other stuff I want to play here tonight. And as I said, this has all been played before on Free Radio. If you want to hear it, go to Santa Cruz Indie Media and look up Robert Norris. Actually, go to Google and you just Google for Norris, Robert Norris, ticket, Metro Transit Authority, and you'll be able to find the story and you'll be able to actually download the earlier file that has all this on it. But I'm going to play a little bit now because it is coming up tomorrow. And if anybody has any questions or experiences to relate, and the reason I actually went to the Metro in the first place was because I was told by two homeless guys, Les and Jack, that they were outraged that this music was being played, not this music, the sermons were being played at the Metro, and they wanted me to tell them that they didn't think it was appropriate because they'd also been treated badly by the security guard there.
Well, the security...
When they brought this to the attention of the security guard, he ignored them and told them to leave. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just Robert Norris coming to and getting his ass kicked around. It was other people who were experiencing the same thing, and I felt it was important that somebody say, no, that's not the way to behave. And if you do, at somewhere down the line, and this is where we're beginning to get to it tomorrow at the trial, there'll be a legal consequence to illegal behavior by police authorities.
Well, what's interesting is the business owner that was there had stated in that tape that this wasn't the first time they were doing it. This had been occurring multiple times. It shows a deliberateness to their action.
Yeah, you're talking about one of the fellow inside the Metro who worked at the candy concession. I went in and asked him, you know, have they been playing religious sermons here for a while, and have people been complaining? And he said, yes, they have, and some people have complained. So
about 10%, it seemed, in terms of his numbers.
Right. I mean, and actually, this wasn't the major issue, because when I brought this to the attention, finally, the supervisor, after being ignored and threatened by lower-level security guard, who didn't give his name either, because it's difficult getting these guys' names, he turned off the sermons. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm going to play some of this now so we can talk about it more. People can know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And again, 1:30 tomorrow, you get to see, again, I should warn you, if the city attorney is smart, he's going to drop all this stuff and there's going to be nothing happening tomorrow at 1:30 in Department 1. But because they've already sent me all kinds of discovery and tapes and videos, City Attorney John Barrasoni may feel at a point of pride, or he may be aware that since there's a lawsuit coming after this for damages, it's not so much that, you know, I was beaten up by the police, but I was denied access to the Metro. I was humiliated. I was described in police reports as harassing people. I was described as blocking traffic.
Blocking the sign.
And blocking a sign, as if
which is much bigger than you are. That couldn't even be possible.
I tried hard to block that sign, but I just couldn't do it, right? A lot of false allegations were made that does go to my reputation. You might say, well, you're a public figure. People have a right to criticize you. Not if they're making supposedly factually objective reports that are being used to try me in court for criminal behavior. That's different. Mm-hmm. So anybody can say anything they want about me, and it's their opinion. But if a police officer makes official statements to a court with the intention of prosecuting me falsely for crimes I didn't commit, that is serious and has a legal consequence. And hopefully, not just will I beat the criminal charge tomorrow, since it's a criminal trial, but when they are sued in federal court subsequently for civil damages, those will be the damages. Mm-hmm. But my reputation has been injured. Every time a reporter says to me, you know, I don't believe you because, you know, you're a known this and a known that, insofar as it goes back to this kind of incident, mm-hmm. where police lies, mm-hmm. and unconstitutional behavior, where they're trying to blame me for their own lack of understanding of the law or their desire to clear the area of poor people, and because I'm trying to stop them to discredit me, then it becomes an issue of damages.
Well, I think sometimes that happens. I think those people who are trying to help those who you know, don't have as many means as others and are struggling, I think that occurs. I think the person who is trying to do that definitely gets attacked by those who don't want them to succeed.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that happens. And it's not, I'm not naive, and I think you got to have a relatively thick skin. But if it has real consequences in the community and it really affects your ability to be effective, mm-hmm. then that's a damage. That's a damage that you have the right to sue for,
I would think. And you're known as being a radio personality. You're known for interviewing people on the street. This is nothing new. This isn't something that you just started at the Metro Center that day. This is your operating
behavior. I was accused of harassing people with a tape recorder when, in fact, the only people I tape recorded were the two people who originally complained in the first place to me and myself, and the police officers and security guards and supervisors who came up to me and demanded that I leave. And I wanted to simply create a record that, no, I'm not going to leave, and yes, you know, this is what I'm doing here. And frankly, hopefully to expose what they're doing to the community so that less fortunate people with less means who don't have a tape recorder with them might not suffer this indignity in the future.
So you're questioning the process of enforcement as it relates to people hanging at the Metro Center. And that's what you're doing. It's a civil code enforcement. In this case, criminal. They've made it criminal. But it is a municipal code. And so it's a code issue.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for the ordinary layperson, it's a law that they're trying to enforce. That they're not even trying to enforce a law. They're trying to. Their objective is to get rid of people at the Metro they don't like and to get you to kowtow to authority, regardless of how illegitimate or inappropriately expressed or, you know, irrelevant that authority is at the moment. And if you don't do it, they're going to punish you for it. They're going to and when they screw up, they're going to cover their ass as much as they can. And that's what the Metro has been doing and what the city attorney has been doing. And we're going to see some more of that in court. Let me play some of this tape now so we can actually hear what's happening, assuming I can actually get the proper tape rolling. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the tape. It begins with a discussion of the people who actually came up to me and said, you know, we want you to go to the Metro and listen to what's going on. And I didn't set this up. I had no idea what was going to go on. I walked the streets with a tape recorder kind of asking how things are going, and people come up to me and they give me accounts. So here we are.
It's now about 2:25 in front of Chianti's at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific on Sunday, the 2nd of November. I'm talking with
Jack
and Tom. And you guys just came up to me with a concern about the nature of the Holy Word coming out of the Metro Center.
Quotes out of the Bible,
yes.
And commentary in between.
Being blasted out on loudspeaker?
It's out of loudspeaker. Christian radio.
And you then went up to a security guard whose name was... I will not be politically correct and eliminate that from the tape, but mind your language, my son.
Yes.
We're all niggers of one sort or another. I can tell you that right now. Some of us are stuck with it because of our skin color. In any case, what happened when you spoke to this man?
He said that we don't have to be there. We could leave, which we did.
And what did the man look like?
A big fat nigger.
And how would you describe
him? He was a security guard. It seemed like he had nothing to do with any...
Oh, short.
He was huge. Well, he works out with weights and fucks white
backer for the Oilers.
Your man is ruining your cred here with the progressive community, Tom. Tom, mind your tongue, son. So, Did you ask the guard who his superior was? And if you didn't, are you interested in going back and doing that?
Yes, we did. He had no answer. Repeating, if we don't like it, we can leave.
I see. But he didn't attempt to make you leave, right?
No.
Well, thank you for the update. I think you're probably right. I think what you need to do is, I'll just walk by and I'll document it by putting a little on the tape recorder.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So I am approaching the Metro Center. It's about 2:30, a little bit before. And you can hear the sounds of the Metro speakers.
We saw those two things. But you know, God always works in shadows and types. And that's what we saw with the wicked servant.
And I'm standing in front of the doors of the Metro Center. There's a speaker on one side of the doors. I think there's another one on the other side.
Therefore, this forgiveness, this compassion, was a mere temporal type of eternal forgiveness.
Okie dokie. And now walking into and through the Metro, past the Chinese restaurant, over to chat with the security guard. Is not actually playing where the bus stop is, but I guess I'll ask him. Hey there, guy. How's it going? Oh, not bad. I've gotten some complaints about the religious propaganda blasting out. No, it's not your responsibility, but yeah. Do you know who's in charge who I should talk to?
There's no one here right now. You can make a complaint tomorrow morning between the hours of 8 and 4 at the information booth.
And for sure I can. No, you bet. What's your name, by the way? What's your name?
I can't talk to you. I had a reporter.
Hey. You don't identify who you are. I'll be happy to pursue you until you do, man. You're responsible for this area, man.
You don't want me to talk.
You're with the
police escort.
Get a police escort. Be my guest. I'm really just asking you a simple question. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this kind of religious propaganda is not appropriate. You know that. So I'm just trying to find out who I should talk to about it.
All right,
give me your name. Give me your superior's name. Tell me who you work for. Okay, so you're refusing to give me your name and your superior's name. Who do you work for? You have National Securities Industry written on you. You're a tall man, I would say about 6'5". You're African-American, fairly chunky, no offense meant. And again, I make one more request before I file a complaint with you, with your organization tomorrow. I don't think you want to do that, do you? And you're going into the elevator to get away. See you later. How's it going? I'm here in the little store inside the... What's the name of your store here?
Metro Market.
And you said you... What's your first name?
Yes, sir.
And yes, sir, you said a number of people have mentioned this Christian speechifying, or the stuff that's being broadcast over the speakers out front.
Yes.
And how many people would you say have spoken to you about it with some concerns?
Two or three.
And how many customers would you say you've had all day?
I
pretty large number, right?
Yeah.
Maybe 30 or 40 or...
Probably, but it didn't happen today. It's been happening for the past couple of days.
So this has been the same Christian propaganda for the last few days?
Well, I don't hear nothing inside.
You can't hear anything in this store, no.
Yes, but they've been complaining about what's been being broadcast on the stereos.
Interesting. Do we know where that comes from? I mean, you say usually there's a person here, but since this is Sunday, you can't really talk to an employee, right?
Right. Probably tomorrow by Monday.
Thank you. Have a good day. And here again, as we're outside, is what we're hearing.
What's the consequence thereof? He or she becomes accountable. And God calls that accountability, the linkage now, marriage.
So Supervisor 807, at least that's what's on his vehicle. He's just pulled up. And try to find out what, in fact, is who's responsible for this. Apparently, it's been going on for, if the individual we just spoke to is accurate, it's been going on for a couple of days. Hey there. How's it going?
Okay, what's up?
Well, I'm just wondering, who's responsible for what comes over the speakers? I assume you guys aren't particularly.
We are. Why? What's going on?
Well,
is something offensive or bothering you?
Yeah.
Volume-wise or content?
Content. In other words, the volume is okay, and the reason the content... Yeah, it's religious information that would be appropriate in a church or on the street.
Really?
I would think so. But not from a loudspeaker, which is government-funded. That's my concern.
Well, what they did was they made an effort to put music out there that...
It would disperse the crowd.
No. Well, they thought that classical music would not be something the kids that you normally accumulate down here like.
Right.
So this is supposed to be classical.
Right.
But it's not.
Have a list.
And guess what? The name shows now becomes...
Thank you.
This has got
to be it's probably a mistake. What's your name?
My name is Ed Nelson.
Robert Ed. This is I'm with Free Radio, so I'm just doing some investigating.
Okay. Well, I'm going to check it out and see what I can do.
Thank you. Last thing.
That is all of the unsafe that is on the last day.
Do you have any connection with the security guards who run?
That's what I'm calling it right now.
Oh, good. Because the only thing I would also request is if the security guard is requested to say who he is, that he do so. I asked who he was and who his supervisor was. He wouldn't tell me. So
we probably wanted to know why you wanted to know.
Sure.
Specifically.
Well, I told him.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, I said, there's a concern about this. He said, I'm not going to tell you. He didn't want to be recorded.
Oh.
But I said, look, you're in a public...
Am I being recorded right now?
Yes.
You know, you should always tell people.
Well, it is out. I said, with the radio. Remember, you heard me say that?
That's right. That doesn't... Hey, look, I worked with radio for 8 years,
yeah.
And I... E-Unit, could I meet you in the Greyhound lot, please?
I hope you realize you're using it.
And I don't think everybody I talked to when I was in radio would have seen that I was recording.
That's correct. I am, in fact, but you understand, I already had a problem with another individual in here who wouldn't identify who he was, and therefore it was important for me, for my own safety, to record what goes on, because you're in a position of some authority, and it'll be my account against yours if there's a problem. So it's not really a personal, I'm not trying to be,
do you have any control over that?
Yeah, I do it pretty on and off.
On and off? Is the station fixed?
The station is our preset, yes.
It's preset?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Let me talk to you in a second.
Okay.
Thank you both. And the only thing I ask is that there be identification if you're talking to somebody. I just want to know who I'm talking to. That's all. So, apparently the problem is going to be resolved one way or the other, maybe. But I'm too hungry to stay.
And that was November 2nd, 2008, last year. Again, I went to the Metro Transit Center after being told they were broadcasting religious speeches, preaching on the public dime, and tried to report it. I was essentially brushed off by a security guard who actually threatened me, wanted me to leave. I told him, no, give me your name and your supervisor's name. He wouldn't do that. Finally, I did talk to a supervisor who happened to roll up, and apparently he was actually called by the guy. I didn't know that. Ed Nelson is the name of the supervisor, and he took action to turn off the religious preaching. You have any comments on this, Claire? Anything that's come up that you want to comment on? Don't feel obliged. I know you listened to this earlier today.
Well, there's so much. It's amazing to me still that the maybe lack of training provided to the security guards. They realize they're private security, but if you're going to put somebody in that position, there's a certain amount of service, like identifying yourself and providing a reason or a basis for what you're requesting. And in the absence of that, maybe you shouldn't be requesting anything.
Right. Well, remember that we haven't reached the point on the tape where there actually was an arrest, or there was even an arrest
yet.
Threatened.
Yet. But they're still not telling you who they are. They're still...
Right. Well, Ed Nelson did. The supervisor did. But the other security guard, the one actually who I think actually initiated the negative perception of me that led to the later ticket, didn't want to say who he was, and, you know, maybe it was a point of pride with him that he could walk around anonymously and exert power over people
but
and not tell the riffraff who he is.
But at this point, it's very clear you're seeking out information. You're not obstructing anybody's ability to get on a bus. You're not creating any disturbance outside of the fact that they won't answer your question, and you're questioning that.
Right, and I'm documenting the fact that they won't answer my question, and that, of course, you know, does involve my, you know, repeating the point and repeating the question and walking after them when they walk away and say, look, I need to know who you are. You're employed here. You know, you're supposedly in a position of responsibility.
Right. But why should that translate back into we want you to move on or not be here, which is what ends up happening, that you're right now you're just at this questioning point, and you know, if I were you, I wouldn't be expecting the kind of retaliation that it seems got thrown at you.
Right, and we're going to get to that retaliation now. I'm not quite sure. It may involve listening to an interview that I was actually, what happened is I was interviewing two homeless guys. One of them was one of the people, I think, who originally complained, Jack, if I'm not mistaken, although it may have been two totally different people who initially complained about this and asked me to go there, the initial interview you heard. Let's hear it, and you'll hear the security guard, Donnie, or Danny, it's a little unclear what his name is. I guess Delgadillo is his last name. He's the person who will either be appearing in court tomorrow, or if he doesn't appear in court tomorrow, the case will fall apart and there'll be no case, and we'll simply take the case to federal court to sue the city and the metro for doing what they're doing. And but we'll see how that goes. Here's some more of that incident. Again, we're talking about November 2nd. And if you want to read about it more quickly and read some more commentary on it, just Google for Robert Norse, N-O-R-S-E, Metro Transit Authority, Santa Cruz, and you'll come up with this story.
Okay, well, it's about 3:35. I'm at the Metro Center front entrance on Pacific Avenue. A tall, black National Security Agency, that's the name of his private agency. I don't think he's with the real NSA, but just came by and told the two guys who were sitting nearby with backpacks to leave. And I was talking to my friend Jack, who we were chatting about old times, so to speak. But Jack, you said that you recently had an experience here at the Metro, which you too were approached by a security guard.
Yeah, it was actually a supervisor for the Metro.
What did he look like?
I don't know. He looked
American, white?
He looked authoritarian.
White, black, green?
He was a white guy.
I need to talk to a black supervisor today.
Or so. Right. He came over when I was waiting for a bus and asked me what bus I was waiting for. And I just told him one that hadn't come yet. And fortunately, they didn't do anything. But
you were afraid?
He was definitely being pushy about. He wasn't asking me why I was there, but that was what his intent was.
And how long did he stay there to keep an eye on you?
Only probably about 5 minutes after that. He was sitting there for about 10 minutes before he asked me, and then probably about 5 minutes after that.
He just liked your looks.
Maybe so. He might have actually wanted to give me a ride somewhere.
What a sweetie. You don't think so?
Well, you know.
Paranoid dog that you are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If they've got handcuffs, I'm not. No, I ain't going there.
But I notice there's no Christian sermonizing coming out of the speaker.
Yeah,
I asked these guys. I mean,
enough of that.
Hey, I'm with Free Radio, Radio Libre. Any problems aquí con la policía o no?
No, 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 no.
That's okay, él es un poco... Okay. Well, good luck.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure.
you doing, Andre?
I'm doing all right. Another day.
Any hassles?
Nope.
We're just very cheerful today, aren't we?
We're trying.
What's your name, Chairman?
Les.
Hey, Les. Any instance on the street you want to report?
Nothing right at this moment. Actually, really calm.
Cool.
Ranger Wallace busted a bunch of guys out of the clubhouse over at Harvey West at like 8:30 the other night when it was raining.
What were they doing?
Sleeping.
How many were there?
Several, that's all I know.
And you heard secondhand or were there?
Secondhand.
Yeah.
I heard the same thing. I heard that Wallace went out and kicked a lot of people out.
Yep. Were the people inside a building, under a lean-to?
Under an awning.
Yep.
That's very public-minded of him. I mean, it could, you know, cause real damage to that awning by standing underneath it.
Oh, yeah. Like, maybe they couldn't get any sleep.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is wrong. I think everybody in Santa Cruz County should be able to sleep.
Okay, we asked you once to be moved.
What's your name?
A recording thing?
It sure is.
It's on.
Oh, well, you're requesting me to leave a public space open to the public. It's a transit authority.
Can you look that up and come back and talk to me?
No, but if you want to make a false arrest, please be my guest. Hey, I'd love it. Come on, but give me your name, please. Not interested, apparently. And here's another individual who refuses to identify himself. I want you to notice he has no identification on his person, so you can't see who he is except his uniform. So if he makes a mistake, all you can see is the security on his hat.
Should have N.
No, you're required to identify yourself. He's now moving along two other individuals who are harmless, simply standing nearby, and is now walking. Again, last chance to identify yourself. Okay, this is a man of about 6 feet, Latino, chunky, refuses to identify himself. Fair enough.
I love it.
Yeah. Come back, please.
I want to find out about this private property thing.
Actually, it's not private property. It's county transit.
I know. Yeah,
we have a right there.
Yeah.
And if we're going to catch a bus, or I don't see anything wrong with hanging out. We're not smoking. Well, at least I'm not.
No, he wants to request people not smoke. I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
I suppose there might even be a law against sitting near a building, but certainly has no right to.
It's an ordinance. Definitely not a law. It's an ordinance.
Even an ordinance. There's no ordinance that says you can't be at the bus station.
That's right.
But anyway, he left, so it's fine.
Like, it's a guy with a tape recorder. They're like, no,
don't. Right.
We know who that guy is.
So, you were reporting on, both of you were saying there was a report of Ranger Wallace harassing poor people.
Yeah, up at Harvey West by the clubhouse right there.
And what night was that?
About two nights ago.
Yeah.
First rainy night.
Oh, boy, was it raining.
Nope.
It wasn't rainy. It was looked like Niagara Falls.
Really?
Yeah. One of us out here got wet that night.
Anybody get sick?
I've heard a couple of people saying that they're starting to catch cold.
At least the sun came out, and we got some sunshine now.
And we had Dennis over at the clock tower feeding today. So.
Oh, that's good. How many people showed up?
Say at least 150.
And did he have any reports that you know of people being otherwise harassed during this rainy season?
No, I haven't.
What's the word on the armory opening? Anything?
The 15th.
Okay. And
not for sure they would at least open it because it was raining and downpouring like that.
No.
See, when Marcus was over there, he would do that for us, but since he passed away...
No, they can't open up yet.
Marcus used to do it all the time when it was raining. Yeah,
no,
he would let us stay...
Here comes the security guard again. What's your name, sir?
Right, but not the armor.
What's your name? What's your name, sir? What is your name, sir? Again, repeat the question. What is your name?
I'm the one asking the question.
No. You're a man who approached me in a uniform, and you're employed here. What is your name?
What is your name?
I'm a private citizen. You're not. You're trying to give me an order now. What is your name, sir?
I'm going to ask you nicely one more time. I'm asking you to leave the property. Now I'm going to call it back to speak.
Okay. Please, I feel I have a right to be here. I'm, in essence, waiting for a bus. Know what I mean? Jelly bean?
I'm going to ask you...
I'm telling you, so leave me alone. No, I have a right to record what you say. You are approaching me. No, you're in public. You have no expectation of privacy. Go make your phone call, please.
Okay,
go make your phone call.
But please give your name next time. If you're not afraid and you're doing something that's legal, you shouldn't be afraid to give your name.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Anyways, back to what we were saying.
Right.
What were we talking about?
We were discussing, I guess, we had Ranger Wallace, and then we also had...
the armory opening on the 15th.
There's a squad car driving by right now. Call him over. Come on, Mr. Security Guard. I won't give his name. He's right here. Come on back. Or stop harassing people down here, please. Stop harassing the people who are trying to use the public spaces. That's what you're doing. Please stop doing that. Hey. Or give your name and give your supervisor's name. One of the two. Maybe all three.
Yeah. Hey, sis.
Hey.
Yes, I sure do.
And let me get my camera out so we can take a picture of this fine gentleman.
Yeah, really.
Since he refuses to identify himself.
So what is your problem, sir?
I just don't want to be harassed, and I want to know who I'm talking to if somebody does.
We have to have a problem just because we're standing.
We're standing talking. Right. You are creating the problem. That's the problem. Yeah. Can you hold my coat for a minute?
It isn't a problem.
And if I ask you nicely to get down on your knees and start groveling, if I ask you nicely to go back to your house, what would you say to me? You'd say, go away. Stop bothering me.
Exactly.
To you.
See, that's what's wrong in your house.
This is America. It's free here. The city owns this, right? Or the county?
No, it's by a prop.
Who owns it then?
You want to show you the picture of the guy?
Well, the county uses it. And anybody can come and go, right?
We have the right to refuse that.
No, you don't have the right to refuse that.
You have to have good cause. And the fact that I won't leave when you tell me...
It's not a private enterprise. The Metro is not a private enterprise.
Yeah, there's no illegal
government enterprise.
We get fired for that, but someone saw us by a property.
You know, I'm
trying to do my job.
I know you're trying to do your job.
I think part of it, I understand, but I think part of your job is saying who you are and who your boss is. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, it's like, I don't feel like, you know...
It's not right that you come out
but
here.
But the problem is, you're approaching us. You're approaching groups of people and telling us to leave. We're saying, no, this is open to the public, you know?
Right.
This property is open to the public.
I'm asking you not to do this, and you guys are acting like rebellious.
I think that you don't have any leg to stand on.
Look, if somebody told you that you couldn't do certain things that you feel you had a right to do, you might listen, but you'd make a decision. You'd say, look, officer, I think you're wrong. And I'm not trying to be mean to you. I'm not trying to single you out personally, but I tell you, and I ask you again for your name and who you work for in terms of your superior.
Did he ask you to leave?
No.
Did you ask him to, like, turn off the radio or something like that?
Yeah, and he did. Finally. First he refused. He refused to give his name. I got his superior, and his superior ordered him to turn off the radio.
Oh, okay.
And did. That's what happened, as I understand it. Well, it's you know, you can't have... If you're in a church, you can get some Christian propaganda. Proposition, too.
I can't take it.
Let me take a look. I haven't voted yet, but I'll read this before I go to the polls.
Yes, it won't take away your right to eat meat, just mean the animal.
It'll be treated better, yeah. Or,
yeah.
I'm sympathetic to it, you know, I agree.
And usually they have to shoot them for hormones and all.
Yeah.
Make them lick.
Right. Right. You know, what I'm going to do, and again, you're refusing. You call you Dan. Now, will they know you by the name Dan? If I say to your superior, a man named Dan spoke to me, they'll know who I'm talking about. Is that an accurate name? That's an accurate name. Well, I'll give you my card. Do you want my card? Lest I be accused of littering. I don't mind you having my card. In fact, if you have something you want to talk about, I do a radio show on this stuff. Here.
What radio show?
It's called Bathurst Spears Broadside. It's on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Over there by the library?
No, down there.
Down where?
Down Laurel Street.
It's a radio station in Laurel Street?
It's a pirate radio station. Pirate radio station? Underground radio station.
Arr!
Yeah, we've been going for about, since 1995.
And again, you're listening to a November 2nd conversation with a security guard, Donnie Delgadillo, I think his name is, who ultimately wrote me a ticket and enforced me to leave the area because He gave various reasons. One was he felt I was blocking a sign, which he later, that was what he later claimed to the police. Another,
well, he didn't hear your first answer, which was you were there waiting for a bus. When he asked you your purpose for being there, you informed him of a legal purpose, and then he did not leave you alone.
You actually don't need to be waiting for a bus. You can be doing many other things. You pointed out a petition gatherer came around and was giving out literature. You hear a woman's voice
yes.
here. I was actually interviewing two people. Who were homeless about, you know, problems they were having with Ranger Wallace, new shelter situations that were coming up. And it was a public area, and there was very little traffic. It was a kind of a sunny Sunday afternoon with not much traffic.
Well, no one that you spoke with said, don't talk with me, or I don't want to be interviewed.
Right, there was none of that.
No one denied an interview.
So this is all going to be coming up tomorrow in a court, for those who are interested, 1:30 in Department 1. I'm being accused of refusing to leave a business.
Trespassing
when asked to do so, when requested to do so. And the point here, the lesson to be learned for me, and perhaps for others, at least, and I think I knew it before we actually didn't really need to learn it. I mean, I simply needed to put it forward, is that you don't do what people in uniforms tell you to do just because they have a uniform and a badge and access to other guys with badges and guns and tasers, mm-hmm. even though that's a threat. I mean, it's always a possibility.
But, you know? But let's talk about the ordinance that you were cited under, which was the trespassing ordinance, which is just a generalized ordinance section that
it's
was for business.
It's just a pretext.
But yet there's a second section that got adopted, and we're talking about Santa Cruz Municipal Code.
I'm reluctant to go into the details of this because, mm-hmm. first of all, people don't have the ordinance in front of them. But the basic point is there was no criminal behavior
Correct.
Happening here.
Nothing.
And so he pulled an ordinance out of his hat to try to use, which the police then colluded with him. When the police arrived, the police should have known better. They should have known that there's nothing illegal about standing and talking to two people
at a bus station.
In the front area of the bus station, even if the security guard doesn't like you. But that's not sufficient grounds for him to force you to leave. They should have told him, as the police officers told Mike Rotkin a year and a half ago, when I came into an ACLU meeting with a large sign that said, end the sleeping ban. It was a public meeting of the American Civil Liberties Union, which in other cities has opposed the sleeping ban, but because of Mike Rotkin and other anti-homeless voices who are against civil rights for homeless people in this regard, they support these crazy laws.
But
when I came into that meeting, he tried to have the police arrest me. But the police said, no, Mike Rotkin, even though you're vice mayor or a council member, even though you're on the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union, we can't arrest this man because he's engaging in First Amendment protected activity. Mm-hmm. That's what I was doing, of course, at the Metro. Mm-hmm. But the Santa Cruz Police Department in this instance did not do that. Instead, as you will learn if you come to court tomorrow, or if you want to look it up online, and you can find the story on Santa Cruz Indie Media if you want to go look for it, I was instead given a citation. And I was forced to leave the property and told not to come back for the rest of the day.
Well, did they ever consider that you could have been needing to take a bus home and that would have deprived you of your way to get home?
They didn't care, obviously.
Right. They didn't hear you when you told them you were there to wait for a bus.
They didn't ask me if I needed to use the facilities. They didn't use the rules that are actually, as you were going to point out, part of the facility rules are that if you're going to tell someone to leave a public transit facility, unlike a private business,
there are some rules.
You have to give them notice. You have to tell them it's only for a short period of time. You have to get, it has to be written notice.
Written.
And it has to be because there's a disruption of some kind, of a significant sort. And none of these things were happening, and none of these things were done,
mm-hmm.
Except I guess they told me that I was only banned for the rest of the day. So there was that. But, you know, they simply weren't following procedures. But really more importantly, going into all the arcane legal details, the real issue is, were police and security guards regularly driving away a poor class of people and treating them with a kind of disrespect and with kind of an indignity, suffering them to a form of humiliation that has been happening with some regularity or has been happening with sufficiently unchecked response, that is to say people have no response, they can't really respond to it because they have no power, that it needs to be brought to public attention. I felt it did. I feel it does. That's why I'm discussing it tonight. That's why I'm going to court tomorrow. That's why you can read about it, or you can come down to court again. Department 1, 130-701 Ocean Street. The Santa Cruz County Courthouse is a place to go in case you're interested in this. And if you have any questions, you can call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And you are listening to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me is Claire Machado, who knows something about the law. She's worked in city and county governments for 20 years, is now in practice for herself, and is pretty significant amount of expertise on redevelopment and land use issues. Any comments, Claire?
Well, again, I think anyone who is providing security services at the Metro has to do that with the mindset that it is a place that the public goes to take and use public transit facilities, and unless they're doing something that's harming someone or themselves, which you obviously weren't doing, you should have had a right to be there. I think anybody would be offended similarly if they were going to be told to leave as you were without having cause.
I mean, we know that, for example, next week, Donna Dice will be going to trial on Monday. She's an elderly woman, 61 years old, disabled, who lives in her vehicle, who last May had her arm broken by Sergeant Christian Lamas. That's his name. Still employed with the police department, as far as I know, still kicking, making over $100,000 last year for his, including overtime. You can actually get how much money police are making by going to the Sentinel website. They've got an interesting new feature that allows you to do that, an interesting and rare utility of the Sentinel website, which usually is not very useful at all. Sentinel is our local paper, which I tend to call the urinal or the scent anal, because
senile?
The senile is a little too soft for me. I don't think, I mean, it is senile, but it slants stories in ways that are harsh and anti-homeless and also discriminate against activists. So,
and we believe it slants stories for the county government personnel as well. So Don Miller is their editor. We have sent objections into the slantedness of the stories surrounding this Board of Appeals lately.
And again, we were talking earlier, listening to Claire Machado here, about a successful pressuring of the Board of Supervisors to establish and to reveal and acknowledge for the public a Board of Appeals that allows people who are cut off or harassed or fined or denied permits by the county planning department to actually go to the board and appeal. But apparently the board's attempt to set up its own procedures has been thwarted more recently, or at least that's what the chair of the board, Mike Bethke, sought, because he resigned in protest through undue pressure. From the
actually due to a
staff.
Lack of respect from
the
staff,
respect.
And rightly so. He's a qualified guy. He knows what he's talking about. I think he went in to have a simple meeting on Friday and didn't like the result of that meeting. I'm disheartened to lose someone of his caliber. It's distressing. It's distressing because you want to see the system work for people. And
what's coming up next, Claire, that people should know about on that?
Well, the board is going to be meeting Monday night on the 18th at 6 p.m. And again, they'll be taking up their bylaws and procedures, and at least hopefully two or three appeal matters, depending on whether they finish with the first two. Although they've agendized it in different order.
This is the fifth floor of the county building.
Yeah, fifth floor, county building, 6 p.m., Board of Supervisors chambers.
Sounds too boring for me to go to, but maybe you can give us a report on that.
Well, also, the prior board meetings are being aired on community television because they have been videotaped, and there is a schedule of when they're going to be shown again. And so if you go out to the community television's website, you can take a look
at
the programming.
Will the firing of the appropriate officials also be televised? We'll be able to see the swearing out ceremonies.
I don't know.
Lampoon had
that'll be interesting if it occurs.
Swearing out ceremony for Richard Nixon when he was when he resigned under threat of impeachment, or actually, under threat of impeachment. He was never either impeached or convicted, but he was it looked like it was going to happen, and they had to curse you, Richard Nixon, fuck you, get out of here. It was a swearing out ceremony. So I think it would be nice if we actually not only saw the arcane legalisms and got to hear the excuses that the county bureaucrats use, as well as the outrage coming from members of the public, but actually saw some real action. Although I guess the only real action you see is the action that you yourselves initiate out there, listeners. Call-in number is 427-3772. In the studio with me, a rare opportunity to talk to an expert Claire Machado if you want to. Claire can also be reached off air if you want to get in touch with her. Is there a way you can get you can be reached, Claire?
Sure. Phone number 831-704-7264. Email thecrystalpig@yahoo.com. That's thecrystalpig@yahoo.com. And sure, anybody who's having difficulty out there wants more information can call me. There's a good site for people to go out and look at, which is called straighttalknews.org, which has a lot of good information about who's fighting the county and how they're being successful in federal court and with their lawsuits. And there's also hot news and information. There's information about what's going on at the board level, when there's meetings again, all kinds of good stuff out there. It's called straighttalknews.org.
And let's have a musical break. We have about a half an hour left in the show. I'm going to be playing some more interviews and reading some articles. And who knows, Claire may hang with us or she may beat a retreat. We'll see what she decides to do. If you want to reach her, the call-in number is 427-3772 here in the studio. And now is the time to call in. I hope that we actually have an operational line. Haven't heard any phones ringing or seen anything blinking, so I don't know. But let's take a little Peter, Paul, and Mary break. Well, it... was the ancient Joan Baez, actually Phil Oakes' song, I think it was, sung by Joan Baez.
A lot of people tell me I sound like Joan Baez. I have music out there on the net that people
That's
may not
right.
know
you
about.
That's right. You are an instrumentalist as well as being instrumental in dealing with some of these issues. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides coming up at 8 o'clock. Don't forget, if you're tired of all this babble, you can hear from the cream to the dregs, probably with Uncle Dennis. I think last week he had a stand-in. One of our old broadcasters, old lady Scararms, came in to cover for his show. But I'm not sure who's going to be doing it this time. But, hey, Uncle Dennis not only plays music from those old nostalgic days, but he also gives you Earth First updates on environmental activism. So check it out if you're interested. Here's some interviews from the street, which often make up a large percentage of what I do on the show. Tonight it's been me babbling about my own case, although as I like to think that the case is not just my own, but it has to do with other people as well, and that's the whole point.
So we're talking with Jeff Med.
And Jeff, we're here in front of the Logos bookstore. It's about 5 after 12 on April 15th, a Wednesday, sunny Wednesday. You say you got a panhandling ticket?
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago. I was unaware of a new panhandling after sunset ordinance that went into effect.
It's actually been in effect since 1994.
I'm permanently disabled, and I was just wondering, is it lawful for the police to give out tickets to people who are permanently disabled and unaware of the current laws?
It's kind of ironic, you know, in the Middle Ages, in London in the 19th century, in Skid Row, in cities throughout the country, if you're disabled, if you're blind, if you're a beggar, you have a right to panhandle. In Santa Cruz, your rights are severely restricted if you're a panhandler, regardless of whether you're disabled. In fact, if you misrepresent your disability, that's a crime in Santa Cruz under the anti-homeless panhandling law in Santa Cruz passed in 1994.
Ordinances or whatever they are.
Do you know the name of the officer who gave you the ticket?
I don't know.
What did he look like? Or what did he say to you anyway?
It's the two guys that are on the beat after sunset.
Winston and perhaps Warren.
One is perfectly normal, and the other is mentally ill with this weird squinty...
Winston, perhaps. Although I don't know if we call... I would call him spiritually strained. Perhaps mentally ill would be a little harsh, but perhaps. Why do you call him mentally ill?
He seemed to be almost exhibiting, like, paranoid schizophrenia.
In what way? Put that in layman's language.
He was laughing and mocking me.
What did he say that he mocked?
Everything that I said to him, he would just parrot back to me in this mocking way.
And for example, what's one of the things you said?
I would think that they have a contact number and would want.
I can't really.
It's been a number of weeks, but you do have that that vague recollection.
Is this lawful for them to give out tickets to people with permanent disabilities?
You know,
Can they do this?
It's actually, I believe that the law, their little code passed in 1994, says that they are allowed to ticket anyone who asks for anything of value after dark, regardless of their disability. However, that's probably quite unconstitutional. And, you know, we need somebody like yourself who might be interested in challenging it. So if you'd like, give me your number and email, and I'll get back to you. We'll talk to you some more about it.
You know, I'm homeless, and so I...
We don't talk to homeless people. I'm sorry. You're going to have to go the other way. I'll never want to see you again. Just kidding around,
of course. I'm not computer literate, so, you know, I don't have any...
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
I've lived here most of my life. I'm almost 46 now.
And what's your disability? If you care to say.
Poisoning.
Really?
From the MMR vaccine. I almost died from it.
And what kind? How does that impact your life now?
Yeah, but then you was still...
If you wish to say. And don't feel under any obligation to say anything.
Hey, guy. You know, I wouldn't even know how to answer that.
In other words, does it make it difficult for you to work? Do you have trouble sleeping? Does it interfere with your communication skills? What kind of an impact would it have on you?
It completely wiped me out. I don't have really any recall of my past life.
Had a memory impact.
Yeah, I've only had... access to speech for like the last 5 years of my life.
So previous to that, you were...
I almost died from it.
Now, did that mean you could no longer talk?
Yeah, I've been speechless most of my life.
And how old were you when this accident happened?
You know, what age are we all when the state mandated MMR vaccine is...
You remember when they went... But when they...
What was that when they gave it to us?
I don't know. I don't
5, 6, 7 years of age?
I don't know. But you would probably know, because before that time you were, you know, probably an ordinary guy, and then you developed a problem, right? Anyway, perhaps I'm misunderstanding, but I definitely want, you know, encourage you to stay in touch with the number. Our number is on this thing, so if you want to get in touch, you can. I'll be playing this on free radio probably tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening.
Okay.
Sorry, I haven't got more kind and hopeful words for you. But I appreciate your account.
It's the end of the world as we know it. So,
where did this happen, by the way, this panhandling citation?
Politicians are getting away with murder as fast as they can.
That's for sure. Where did the where did this happen?
I was in front of the New Deal shop.
And the cops just happened to be walking by, and he saw me with my little sign, and it was just right around sunset.
What did your sign say?
It said, broke and hungry.
No, that's illegal in Santa Cruz. Thank you very much. Again, we've been talking with
Jeff Med.
Thanks, Jeff. We're talking to...
I'm Spencer Lindsay.
And Spencer, here we're at the corner of, I guess it's Walnut and Pacific, sunny day. You've had some problems, poor folks downtown.
Not poor folks, but just...
Panhandlers?
Just people panhandling and, you know, jumping out at you and making noises and, you know, yelling at me while I'm with a client. Yeah.
What kind of work do you do?
I do computer graphic animation, that kind of stuff.
How long have you been around Santa Cruz?
24 years.
Has it changed at all in your mind?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
What kind of changes do you notice?
What have I noticed? I think when the Cooper House came down after the earthquake, that was a big one for me. I think that the whole kind of feel of the downtown changed. I think that there's a it just feels it definitely feels less safe now, which is weird because I'm not usually safety concerned.
And have you actually recall the last incident you had that concerned you, or that involved your safety, or the safety that of someone else, or something to that effect?
The safety of someone else.
Well,
I mean, I haven't been mugged or anything like that. No,
but you felt less safe.
Well, when someone I don't know walks up to me and
say, microphone in your face.
No, dude, this is fine. No, when someone I don't know walks up to me and yells at me that they want some money for, you know, for drugs, or if they want some money because they want to get some cigarettes, or you know, and they actually, you know, they're not even trying to say they're using it for money, mm-hmm. or for food. You know, they're saying
this happened like in the last week, or
yeah, it happens all the time.
So the last time it happened to you was like today it happened, or
not today, probably 2 days ago.
And describe the detail, as much of the detail as you remember.
Why?
Well, because I'm trying to get a picture of the specific, where it happened, what happened, and so forth.
Okay. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of incidences over the past 4 years that I've worked down here.
But one you remember most recently would be, for instance?
A guy was panhandling on the side of the road up by Borders and said, hey, man, give me a cigarette, because he saw that I was smoking. Mm-hmm. And I said, no. And he started screaming swear words, saying fuck you and stuff like that to me. And, you know, I mean, and continued to scream when I was half a block away. And I was with a client. So, you know, clients of mine tend not to want to come down here because of that kind of behavior. So that, you know, I totally get, that, you know, wanting to keep the, you know, keep police brutality off the streets. I get that. I totally get that. We don't need that.
But yet your first concern when we brought this flyer to you was you were concerned more about harassment by folks who are not police.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm, of course, an advocate mostly on the other side, and so I think it's important to hear your side, too. I do a radio show. That's what this is about.
Oh, cool. Good. What's the show?
It's a Free Radio Santa Cruz, and it happens every Thursday evening and every Sunday. You're also a radio man, a personality. Your name again is?
My name is Spencer Lindsay, and our show is Tomorrow Matters. It's on KRXA 540 AM from 10 to 11 on Sunday mornings.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And we are approaching Artisans, a store on Pacific Avenue in the shade. We see a police officer talking to a couple of people. And the Cop Watch crew has arrived to listen in on what's happening. Looks like there's a code issue.
Is Tom not?
And over here is Tom Noddy. It's Officer Forbes.
Do you want this public? You can go ahead and step back if you want.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So they apparently want a privacy there. Don't know, but it looks like a voluntary police conduct. So.
And often, if there is, well, let's put it this way. Yes, I would say often, if a person who is being harassed by the police, asks me not to record it, and they're in a public place, and it seems to me to be a matter of public interest and importance, I will say I'm sorry. I think it needs to be recorded, and I'll do it anyway. But if a police officer is having a consensual contact with someone, like they're getting some sort of lost item or they're reporting some problem they have, personally, I don't feel it's necessary to intervene, even if they're in a public place and they have no expectation of privacy. Sometimes people get very upset when I'm on the street with a tape recorder. A musician, a woman downtown, got very upset and started shouting at me and accusing me of harassing her, called the police, 911, because I was refusing to turn off my tape recorder. And she actually garnered support from a guy nearby who told me I was being very uncool by not turning off my tape recorder.
Intimidates people so much. Why, you know, again, if they're saying things that are offensive, that might intimidate them not to say it. But other than that,
well, I think her concern was that she felt, you know, she was afraid I'd be using it for commercial purposes. She was
what, her music?
Yes, she was playing music on the street.
Okay, so she was more afraid of like a copyright infringement of her music and not getting some type of royalty if you're going to use it on air or something.
Well, I think it was also she wanted to control the space around her. She saw me as a large, threatening male, you know, because I'm hefty and I'm about 6 feet tall, you know, and I'm
did she stop performing?
She demanded I move away from her. I took a couple steps back. She called the police, wanted me to give ID. Police actually never made it over there, but I told them if they wanted to contact me they could.
Well, sometimes, you know, when people are approached, especially women, by men that they don't know, it is, uncomfortable, let's say.
Yeah, it happens. I usually, if a person is performing in public, I don't think they have any right to restrict what recordings are made of them. And they can request it. She didn't really request it. She demanded it. And I guess that kind of raised my hackles. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll play some more of this. You got any other comments you want to make?
Well, I think that it's unfortunate. A lot of musicians really would prefer to be recorded and
most
played and get the
most
airplay.
Most do, although my recordings are not the best, and they're kind of little
splotches. But even so, you know,
your
2 seconds of fame can happen on free radio just as much as commercial radio, and in terms of music, any airplay is and getting out.
I think it was, so for some it's a power trip, for some it's a, you know, it's a control issue. I mean, I'm a control freak in some respects. But
well, if I were a musician, and I am, and I set up to play down somewhere and somebody pulled out a tape recorder to tape record me, I would more consider that flattering than something offensive, which is
if you're indoors, you can control the venue, you know, and if you're charging money for people to come in and so forth. And you'll often see them say, you know, if you come into a movie or a theatrical performance, you're not allowed to tape record and so forth.
I think I'm just happy they don't throw tomatoes, you know.
There you go. Back to the interviews. This is from mid-April.
So here we have Tom Noddy gesticulating in front of a police car, talking to another individual, taking up a bench with his guitar. What is going on here, Noddy? And how are you? And a love written on a guitar case? Is this some sort of hippie thing?
Oh, it's definitely a hippie thing. You're not in, Jeff. You have nothing to do. Nothing. Okay, pleasure. I'm just strolling the streets and talking
performing.
To...
When he opens his mouth, he's performing on the streets, so you have to watch out for that.
I'm still waiting for the traveling puppets. I haven't seen him in 30 years, so where are those traveling puppets, Tom Noddy?
You know, I actually had a couple of those puppets sent up to me in Seattle when I was playing the Moisture Festival with the intent of doing Puppet Souls up there. I was going to do that, and it didn't work out. It was a big variety show, and I would have needed a little extra time in the show, and I couldn't get it.
Why don't you take it to the streets, Noddy?
To the streets.
You juggled once in 2003. You can puppet again. After all, we're all kind of puppets, aren't we? Isn't that what somebody once said in a puppet show in the 70s?
I don't know.
You don't want to be a puppet, do you?
I didn't say all that.
Double counting to four.
I thought that part was so obvious to say.
I think you did. Don't remember it for exactly. Well, you're back in town. I hear that you're concerned about street performers and how they're being treated.
Oh, I am concerned. I don't have a lot of information yet about how they're being treated. But I know that the foundation isn't there anymore, so I assume nobody would even if there was any intent of treating them well, nobody would know how to do that anymore. They took away the guidelines and they replaced it with a web of ordinances that nobody understands. And they were told that that's what it would be, and that's what they did, and that's what they got.
Now, wait a minute. Officer Forbes is up here. I can assure you he understands the ordinances perfectly because he enforces them. What would a police officer do who would actually enforce ordinances he doesn't understand? Know what I mean?
I think I do know what you mean. I think I do.
So have you seen any instances that cause you concern about how these ordinances are being enforced or not understood?
I haven't been here.
So what are you talking? You're not criticizing our police department, I hope.
I'm not criticizing yet.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Try to step back from the rabble and show a little class here, okay?
And my concerns at this moment are not with the police. It's with the city council and the downtown merchants.
Oh, you're not criticizing the merchants and the lifeblood of our town, the Downtown Association.
Have you talked to Chip?
I have many a time, perhaps too many a time, talked to Chip.
Chip is the executive director of the Downtown Association. Tom Noddy is a world-famous bubble performer who also began 30 years ago with a group called the Traveling Puppets, which was a political show. He lived in his vehicle and was a radical puppet performer on the streets of Santa Cruz. He also helped in 1980 with Jan Luby and others to originate the street performers' voluntary guidelines, which essentially said street performers will perform until somebody comes up, whether they're a performer, resident, merchant, cop, whoever, and says, can you move on after an hour? And then they will if they feel like it. It's all voluntary. It's no law. Unfortunately, in 2003, council member and Santa Cruz Pacific Avenue hall monitor Ed Porter, along with Emily Riley, or Smiley Riley, as we like to call her, set up a law that made it illegal to perform after more than an hour with have a display device, actually, whether you're performing or tabling or just sitting there panhandling, and you could be forced after an hour to move along on threat of anywhere up to a $1,000 fine. Usually we're talking several hundred dollars. Second offense, a misdemeanor up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. So anyway, that's the background for Tom Noddy. Claire? Got some thoughts?
Well, they don't seem to do that for everybody. Certainly, they're, performers such as Tom that certainly have been at it a while. They're a visual performer.
The Great Morgami, as you pointed out.
Yeah, there are others who are actually pretty well known. The Great Morgami, an accordionist. I didn't know who he was until at Santa Cruz, but I know who he is because he's in Santa Cruz.
Well, he violates the laws, not just the law about not being there for more than. I mean, actually, you don't violate the law for being there for more than an hour until you're warned. So if they don't warn him,
right,
he doesn't violate the law.
Well, again, we wouldn't have these icon performers that we have. There's another gentleman in town, dresses a little funny, has an umbrella, walks around.
Used to. He doesn't do it anymore.
Maybe he doesn't anymore, but
Umbrella Man, Robert Steffen.
Yeah, I don't know these people by name. I certainly have seen them more than once. It's certainly ongoing behavior, something that they do for a living or that makes them happy and doesn't seem to harm anyone. I understand that sometimes performances get loud and might be concerning to neighboring businesses so long as, they do it with some kind of decorum. I understand the drum circle has been pushed around several different places.
They're still maintaining their place next to the farmer's market.
Oh, good, yeah. Good. They have that place,
they've
at least the one place.
For the moment, anyway.
Well, they have a place. At least they have a place. And the point is, there should be a place for everything and everyone, a time for every purpose under heaven kind of a thing. And if
turn to you.
Well, if we can't sing, dance, and laugh, who are we as a people and who are we as a culture and why do we want to seek to quash that?
You clearly
want
to destroy merchant profits downtown. I have nothing more to say to you, Machado.
Well, if they're interesting performers, you would think that it would draw more people and then might go shopping right next door.
Oh, you're just trying to, you would think so, wouldn't you?
I like Chip.
I like him as a person. I think I regret the position he's taken.
Now somebody's going to be in that position, and
perhaps Tom Noddy for head of the downtown
assistant. Get out of here.
Oh, I think it would be quite a coup if they could bring you over to their team.
Well, that was almost. Hi, Rita. How you doing? Good to see you.
How long are you back for?
Oh, I don't know, months.
Because we're naughty watching at the moment. Do you want to go cop watch? All right, I got, my team demands we go cop watch. Sorry.
All right. Well,
there is a cop car here.
That's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for. It's true. But you do get a free flyer because of your good work when you show up, that is.
To pay for those flyers.
What's that?
Everybody else has to pay for these flyers, right?
Everybody else?
No, he's paying.
Sure.
Yeah, I got the chinks, man. So we're talking to one-time barefoot Brad. Now he's got big boots Brad. Please help with a few bucks or any food and thanks. See, you're on the streets next to the Santa Cruz Muni sign. No skateboarding, no skate devices, no dogs, no this, no that. In front of O'Neill's. What's your gig here, man?
Well, I'm saving up money for college. I'm saving up money so I can go to community college and overturn all the oppressors.
I see. Now, I understand you were sitting a little bit more to your left, but one of the hosts of the police told you couldn't sit near this sculpture. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was seven on their side that time. Yeah, that's correct.
Seven squares meaning 14 feet. Even though this is the so-called exempt zone, I guess it's only exempt for display devices.
Well, you know what? I'm displaying my devices right here. Now I've claimed this a free exempt zone.
And what devices they are, my boy. What can I say?
Ryan, it's a thankless task. It's the same as door-to-door.
Fair enough. Well, we're looking for cops. We're going to go cop watch. Thank you very much.
All right. If you see a couple, you know, give me the old behind your back.
I will tell the police what you thought about that.
Garlic in your soul, brother.
I'll send them that quote. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Just came from a really serious criminal incident. I witnessed it myself. You might even say I was close enough to touch the crime scene. There was a couple that was reportedly, in fact, I saw with my own eyes, pushing the Van der Kruk, I'm not quite sure the name of the person's pendulum. Madam, have you always been a criminal?
I've always been an outlaw.
Oh, look at this. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry show, he's got a beard now. What is your...
Oh, you think you're the only one in the club?
Well, I've got a longer beard.
Well, I finally grew old enough to grow one, you know.
And actually, that's Mr. Twister who's joined the crowd. We have Mr. Twister, who's the clown who occasionally comes to town, who actually achieved great notoriety through putting coins in parking meters. And he also does balloons, of course. He does balloon shapes. There's another balloon guy who's in town, Looney Balloony, who's kind of been the more regular balloon guy. I'm going to turn to an article very quickly here because I only have 5 minutes left in the show. I want to read some of it before, but I want to thank Claire Machado for being on my show. Claire, anything you want to conclude with before we go?
Well, just a reminder for people, Monday night, 6 o'clock p.m., board chambers, be there, be square.
And 701 Ocean Street, 5th floor of the county building. Also, you can check out my trial. That's tomorrow, 1:30 p.m., Department 1, 701 Ocean Street. That's the flat, the county courthouse building. Here's an article from the San Francisco Chronicle. Board moves to assist renters in San Francisco by Marissa Lagos. San Francisco is among the nation's most expensive rental markets, but also offers most tenants some of the country's strongest protections, from limits on rent increases to strict rules on how and when a person can be evicted. Four laws proposed this year would go even further, making it harder to raise rents and evict tenants. I raise this issue myself. I'm reading this story, by the way. As an example of what Santa Cruz won't do, what Rotkin refuses to do as vice mayor, what Mayor Matthews will never do, and what we have to have done here in Santa Cruz. Legislation is broadly aimed at keeping people housed as the city stares down a recession that's affecting the rich, middle class, and poor alike. Three of the proposals, which will have their first public hearing May 18th, would broaden the rights of tenants in the city's approximately 170,000 rent-controlled units. We don't have rent-controlled units in Santa Cruz. We used to have rent-controlled mobile home
we
units.
We do mobile homes.
They were destroyed by the Rotkin-Matthews City Council. Both at De Anza and at Clearview Court.
But it's still in effect in the county?
In the county, there are significant rent controls.
And also the city of Watsonville.
Yeah, but not in the city of Santa Cruz.
Correct.
By allowing renters, these are the new laws being proposed, to add roommates and suspending or limiting rent increases that are a hardship to tenants. The fourth and latest proposal expected to be formally introduced today by Supervisor John Avalos. Actually, this story is dated Tuesday, so it'll be a couple days ago, would give eviction protections to tenants in non-rent-controlled units. about 17,000 of them citywide, according to advocates. Currently, landlords can evict tenants in rent-controlled buildings for 14 just causes, among them failing to pay rent or if the landlord wants to move in. But those in buildings constructed after 1979 can be kicked out for any reason. We're talking about San Francisco here. Avalos' proposal is aimed at protecting people in foreclosed homes who are being evicted by banks. He said last year 667 foreclosures occurred in the city, and at least a quarter of those had renters living in them, according to Assessor's Recorder's Office.
And now foreclosures are up.
Dig it. Those renters include people like Laurel Moslin, a 23-year-old student who moved into a Diamond Heights apartment in February, only to see it foreclosed on immediately. Now, Moslin is unsure of where to pay her rent or whether she will have a home for long. Landlords and their representatives, however, see Avella's proposal as unnecessary and possibly a bid to expand rent control. Jan New, director of the San Francisco Apartment Association, represents 3,000 landlords. She said occupancy rates have been falling, pushing prices down for renters at the same time that property values are dropping. New pointed out that the relatively few foreclosures have occurred in San Francisco compared with surrounding cities and wondered why a change to law is necessary. In cases where tenants lose income, she encouraged them to negotiate with their landlords on a case-by-case basis, something she said is happening. I guess he means begging. I don't believe the expansion of just cause eviction is warranted. What's the need for it, she asked, adding that Avalos' proposal could be challenged in court, and no doubt will, by her real estate buddies. That's my addition. The city wouldn't have to spend money fighting legal battles. Can you open the door? If they stopped throwing hand grenades and sat down with us to create policies. Supporters of the expanded protections argue things are tougher for renters, who are more likely than landlords to be low-income, blue-collar, and disproportionately affected by layoffs and government cuts. Sorry, there's no open containers in the studio.
Not open yet.
All right.
We
got a drunkard who's arrived in the studio. I'm contacting the police department.
Why don't you just get the hell out?
You see, and the abusive language as well. As far as I'm concerned, this is the kind of problem we have in America today. You know. These big thugs come in with their beards and their hats. I think they can control everything. Well, I'll tell you.
Your time is up, Robert.
We have a thing to learn. That sounds like Cynthia Matthews is in the studio. Well, I'm going to leave you because, in fact, unfortunately, it is true. My time is up in about 15 seconds. So I'm going to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Thank you, Claire Machado. Come on down to the trial tomorrow, 1:30, Department 1 at 701 Ocean Street, or check me out at the Human Rights Organization meeting next Saturday. That's going to be happening at 3 o'clock downtown.
And on your next show, we'll be talking about how you prevailed, we hope.
Oh, for sure, we hope. And maybe there'll even be a recording.
Well, maybe they'll lock you up and throw you away the key. Or
Dennis, you are such an optimist. Anyway, thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides Between Times. If you've got stuff you want to report, call in or talk about. 423-4833 is the number to call.
dancing with the wind. And the feeling that I'm under. Yeah, I gotta go make it happen. Take the world in a loving embrace. Fire all of your guns at once and explode into space.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also at www.freakradio.org. Uncle Dennis here, twisting the knobs and sliding the sliders and trying to make everything come out right. You are listening to From the Cream to the Dregs, and every Thursday evening I'm in here playing music from the 60s and the 70s. Last week we had a guest DJ. I want to thank George for doing a great job. I, of course, was listening to the show from the offices of one of our esteemed listeners in West Los Angeles, who, as far as I know, has been listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz for years on the Internet, and quite an interesting gentleman. Calls me up every once in a while, and we talk. Anyway, thank you very much for your hospitality. You know who you are, my fan in West L.A. So... And I know that maybe there's at least one new listener tonight who actually just found out I had a radio show and when it was, and might even tune in. Who knows? So that makes at least two people are listening to this, and I hope you're having a good time. A few minutes, we will open the Brew of the Week, something hopefully good. Tonight's Brew of the Week. Tune in about 8:30 for that. At 9 o'clock, we've got the Earth First Update, which is environmental news that you can use. So stay tuned for that, too. Play around with the knobs here a little bit. And so I can talk and play with knobs all at the same time. It's absolutely amazing the way radio is. Yeah. We definitely try to put on a good show for you. Like I say, environmental news at 9 o'clock, and then at 10 o'clock we'll have a whole hour devoted to one band or group or artist called our Spotlight Group of the Week. Don't know who that is yet, but we certainly take suggestions, so if you've got something you want to suggest, do give us a call. Otherwise, what we do here is play music, and we play lots of it. And how about this?
Every guy in